Around the NFL Podcast. Thinks duck is the best type of meat out there.
Erroneous! Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented by New Era. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm joined in a room filled with heroes Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Whoa! D-G-I-F. And I mean it.
Yes. I will not. You are looking at me as if I'm supposed to say something.
Say
I have
something.
Nothing to say.
One day away from getting on that plane. Have you guys, like, started packing or preparing at all?
No. We are leaving for London tomorrow, and I have a lot of work to do, both from packing but also clerical work that I have to get taken care of right after today's show. And I'll leave it at that. What about you guys?
I went out yesterday, took a little trip to Rite Aid and also Ralph's to buy an assortment of toiletries to refresh that Dob kit because we're going to be gone for a while.
Dob kit.
Smart. Yeah, we're going to be done like 9 days. How about you, Wes?
For the first time ever, it was an off day yesterday along with Mark. But
nice.
I got my beard trimmed professionally for the first time.
Wow. That is good prep.
Wow, fancy boy.
I got a haircut, too.
I got
to get haircuts.
If you guys can get coiffed upstairs, I can get trimmed down on my beard.
Yeah, tell me more
about
saved
the trimming that sentence
downstairs.
Yeah.
Yes, the big trip is coming to London. It's less than 24 hours away. And as you know, over in the UK, we have a live show on Tuesday that, listen, little botch of the time zone. Or was it? Or was it kind of like one of those, like, cool, like, you know, edgy Radiohead ticket releases? We dropped the tickets at 2 a.m. London time on Wednesday for our limited tickets available live show on Tuesday. Scooped up almost immediately, even though it was the middle of the night.
I don't know if people would have viewed, on that side of the pond, if you want to say, viewed that as a edgy Radiohead type maneuver. The response was less than.
Well, what's the difference, though?
Either does
way,
give us some edge.
The tickets are going to go quickly, and whoever just happens to see the link when it comes out,
right,
relatively, well, was going to get it. So it's all
Greg,
random.
We'll let you whether handle this with all the people.
So the pothead's sympathetic.
I haven't heard a word, but I'm glad because you know what? The people that are up in the middle of the night. Those are our kind of people, and they're going to be
making
some noise.
I mean, to not have heard a word, though, Greg, you would have had to probably mute or block almost anyone listening to the show that tweeted about it.
No one's tweeted anger about that.
Really?
But I noticed.
You have not seen that?
No.
I've gotten several.
I also don't. I'm not necessarily totally.
Greg's lying.
I 100% haven't seen it. I'm not totally on top of, you know, social media and mentions and whatnot all the
time. That's healthy.
So, yes, we're very excited. We're also going to be appearing on Sky Sports a bunch, especially on the Sunday of week one, specifically the Sunday of week one, also doing some other fun stuff. And if you did want to go to that show and you could not get tickets, we will be doing some type of meetup after the show. So we'd like to meet as many of you as
possible.
And
probably a second one as well later in the week.
Right. Well, we'll see. You guys can go. I don't know if I'm going to do two. That seems
this
a little
side
silly.
Of the table over here. Holy
Tuesday
smokes.
Night. Tuesday night, though.
Yeah.
I'll be with Mark.
Yeah. You guys go for it. Do it every night. That sounds good. today's show is part two of our view of, you know, our above the treetops view, to borrow a little corpo parlance, around the NFC in 48 minutes. How fun. How fun is that? So we have to go through that, and then a little update at the end of the show. I have an idea, a thought connected to Wednesday's show, so we'll get to that. But Emma, how are you, by the way?
I'm doing well, living my best life. Drinking another LaCroix.
Is that
did you get? Was that cleared with Mark?
No, you did not clear that with me at all.
You don't have to clear LaCroix with
me.
That is cool.
Let's operate through proper channels here, please.
Sorry about that.
Right.
On your podcast, you can do whatever you please. Mm-hmm. Obviously, on ours, you follow certain rules. By not speaking, banned words would be, you know, 1A, 1A, 1B, top of the list.
Totally apologize.
It's a little confusing, though, in your defense, MVP, because Mark has used the banned mm-hmm. words since.
Well, you're right. Confused. I'm not confused. I'm not confused in the least.
I'm going to probably keep using it.
Don't let him mansplain
keep
right.
What's allowed and what's not.
I like it. Yeah. You probably brought it back into the lexicon.
I'm getting more of it. I started a new Instagram account, and everyone's response to that was living your best life.
All right. You know the rules. Maybe you know the rules. I don't know if you know the rules. Around the NFC in 48 minutes, exactly 3 minutes on each team in the conference. There are four teams in each division. There are four divisions. 4 times 4 is 16. 16 times 3 is 48.
You have really come around as a
pretty good.
Very basic mathematician.
That's pretty good, though. 16 and 3? Odd and even number?
The bar is outrageously low.
So here we go. There, and again, I don't know what the malarkey that was going on here on Monday's show. I was out. Greg is in the chair, and all of a sudden I look, and the show is like an hour and 40 minutes long for a 48-minute exercise.
Well, see, we're at 6 minutes now.
Right.
You had 48 minutes. That's
yes.
54. You have some bit in the middle at the end. We had 4 ad reads, so that's 4 minutes. We had breaking news with Odell Beckham, so that added, and that's
yeah,
where you
I
get
would
it.
Save anything.
We're going to be over an hour right now.
Right. Well, let's watch the
Emma
difference.
Kept a very tight clock on the on each of the segments. We didn't drift for an extra minute or two on the
it
teams.
It was all good.
Let's see the difference. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, that's a controversial and
it'll be late.
Combative
it'll be,
way to set up the
it'll
show.
It'll be shorter because there's no news to start. I'll give you that. And no drops. That's why it's shorter. I mean, no ad reads.
Don't be defensive.
I think Greg did a good job.
Next time you're on vacation as we soar towards the regular season, we'll try to do better.
Don't throw stones during your annual vacation in the middle of training camp. Hey, let's schedule that one again this year.
I hope you enjoyed your Monday shifts, guys. Let's start it off with the NFC West. Let's fly. All right, I'll get it going. The Rams, yes, they've done a masterful job both through the draft and in free agency. And, of course, the big news that came out today, Aaron Donald now under contract, as we all thought it would and knew it would happen eventually. He's the highest paid player, defensive player in the NFL. So you got Donald under contract. This is a team with a star player at nearly every level. Even the punter's a badass. My question to you guys. This is a team ready to win. I look at it, and I see this as a team, including the Eagles, that should be the heavy favorite in the NFC this year. What is the Achilles heel, potentially, that I'm missing? Because I don't see it.
Well, the easy one right away is an injury to Jared Goff. Just
take injuries out of it.
Pass rusher. Their outside linebackers are among the worst position group in the NFL. We talked about the Jets not having any edge rushers. The Rams do not have any edge rushers to the point that they moved a guy in Dominic Easley that was a defensive tackle for some of his career out to the edge because they're just trying to find someone. They're constructing a defense in a very unique way. These huge, great guys up front in Donald, Sue, and Brockers who are dominant, a dominant secondary, and then that linebacker group. Maybe they don't need great edge rushers, but that's one.
It does feel like some of the havoc they can create against the quarterback come right up the middle of the defense. But this is a little more vague than just a position group, but the way that the NFL works, that what they achieved on offense last year, if the expectation is that they're just going to go out and roll through teams scoring that many points again, just year to year with the way offenses and defenses flow, there's bound to be a step back on that level. They're not going to achieve to that level again, and that they have to adjust to that too.
McVay's an asterisk there, though.
We think he is right now, and I wouldn't be surprised if he is, but typically, no matter what, when you have these peak seasons, you have to expect a little normalcy.
They weren't a peak offense. I mean, they did so much better than they had the year before, but they weren't a top five offense in the NFL. They have a lot of room to improve. You know, like they can be better, I think. The offensive line, though, would be what I would be worried about.
Yeah, my point about injuries, that's fair to say take it out, but the greater point is depth is an issue, especially a backup quarterback, backup left tackle, and if Aaron Donald gets down, there's zero pass rush.
In general, their line, I think, could be problematic. They also got, I saw in Football Outsiders, I think 40 extra points out of their special teams just in terms of value than any other team in the NFL. Can they be
Bones!
That dominant on special teams Bones. Year after year?
And if the Sean, you know, many times when a team has kind of a historic offensive year, the offensive coordinator then gets poached, but to Wes's point, you still got the same man behind the control panel. So are they going to average 30 points again this year? Maybe, maybe not. But I don't think they're going to drop off. And
10,
I think there's just so many
9,
stars on this team.
8, 7,
I just think this
6,
is the year for the
defense
Rams.
Should be better. 4, that's where they can be better.
3, the rest of the conference
2,
is tough too.
1.
We get it. You know dudes' names. Enough.
Moving on. Seattle Seahawks, Mark Sessler.
I think Seattle, we've been gauging this team's all the movements. It's the reverse Rams, where the Rams are stockpiling and adding all these names to create what looks like an all-star team. Seattle dispensed with all the household names, and you've got John Schneider and Pete Carroll left overseeing a roster that I think to many Seahawks fans feels entirely unfamiliar. To me, all these teams right now are interesting because we don't know what direction so many will go in. The Seahawks really legitimately, I'm more interested in this team than I was in the team last year or the year before because you kind of knew what was going to happen with those guys. But what is, because this is a rebuild, but that what is the patience level of that fan base? I'm not sure it's high. What is a successful season in your eyes for Seattle, taking into account that they are a much different team? We don't know how much longer Pete Carroll is going to hang around if it isn't a positive shift very quickly, if not this year or next. For me, I look and say if they go 8-8, you'd have to say Seattle escaped total disaster, and there's still room to grow. They still have some pieces. I don't
see best case scenario for you is 8-8.
Not that's a successful season with all the removal of pieces. And they still have stars here and there on the roster, but I don't see them as a playoff team in this conference, the way the conference is stacked right now.
I think that's fair. 8-8 seems like it would be a decent season, successful. And then if guys who are exciting to watch, even the punter, they might have the most exciting punter in the league in Michael Dixon. So if guys like that emerge for the team to kind of like, or for the fans, the 12s to get behind, and believe me, the 12s are already getting behind Michael Dixon.
Oh, Michael Dixon, yeah, on the broadcast, the aforementioned broadcast, Mina Kimes is pumping up Michael Dixon as a potential Rookie of the Year candidate. Where does he get it, in offense or defense?
Chris Carson, David Moore. Like, they've got some exciting guys.
I think they can be a playoff team. This organization's been too great this decade to think anything less, at least in terms of that's what their goal is. Maybe not a great playoff team, but if you've got Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll and enough of these pieces, can you win 10 games? I think you can.
All I'd say in the NFC, if they're a playoff team, that's a very disappointing outcome for a couple of other these teams
right,
that we've ticketed
how it goes.
For the playoffs.
That's how it goes.
They still have one of the best quarterbacks in the league. They have one of the best home field advantages in the league. They still have pieces. I know that they're not the same on defense anymore, and I know Earl Thomas is just floating out there. What's going on with Earl Thomas? Maybe he is playing with the team this year, but who knows? So would it shock me if they got to 10 wins? Not at all, and if that can get them playoff. I think they're probably a 9-win team, though, and that probably is not enough in the NFC.
Probably not. The line, the offensive line, for what it's worth, played well in the preseason. They, you know, it's a totally different scheme, and the hope is getting rid of Cable makes them better. He like Russell Wilson sounded.
You hate Tom Cable.
He sounded so surprised though. After the third preseason game, he's like, "I had all day back there. That was amazing. Like that's never happened before. It's only the preseason."
They're also asking for what it's worth. It could be worth nothing.
Yeah,
we have no idea what it's worth.
Bob Wiley or Tom Cable.
Oh, Wiley in a heartbeat.
Three, two,
fun guy.
One. Whoa, bros who like sports, real original. Next.
Whoa. Seahawks. Cardinals. Greg.
All right, I got. You know, these teams assigned, and I try to write down one thing for each one of these teams to talk about, all 16. This was the hardest one to come up with one thing to talk about. I think that's where the Cardinals are at right now. They're a forgettable team. They've
Ouch.
Had more transition than just about anyone. They could be terrible, and it wouldn't surprise me. They could be average, and it wouldn't surprise me. But I think the one thing that was missed in the Bruce Arians era was defense was his sneaky way to having a great career there as a coach. They were a top seven defense every year in Bruce Arians' run. So for all the attention that Bruce Arians got, the coordinators that he had on defense and the production that they had, that's what kept them afloat. That's what had them winning eight games last year when really they had no business winning eight games. And they've had a ton of turnover the last 2 years on that defensive side. They've changed schemes really dramatically in terms of going from man-to-man to zone and then on offense, probably from aggressive to very conservative. So with all of this change, I think it's fair that they go into this season with about as low expectations as maybe any team in the NFC. And that's not the worst place to be for a first-year head coach.
And a first-year quarterback.
They are, to put that in perspective, they are replacing about 95% of their carries and pass attempts from last year, which is the second most, I believe, in the last 20 years, according to Football Outsiders Almanac, behind the 2002 Ravens.
Well, the carries is a good thing.
Yeah, the carries is a positive, right?
And the defense has about as much turnover as any defense has had in a while. They're not big names beyond the Honey Badger, but guys like Carlos Dansby and Frosty Rucker and Josh Morrow, all these guys were playing heavy snaps.
I mean, I think getting David Johnson back is a godsend for whether it's Sam Bradford for however long or Josh Rosen. The thing that throughout the preseason concerned me, because it was hard to get a gauge on Josh Rosen. He did a lot of things really well, and you can see this guy is going to be a good quarterback. But the offensive line had him running for his life. This is a bad offensive line, and you've got a quarterback that Sam Bradford is like a pillar back there if he's not protected well.
Pillar, so, like he's a rock and someone you could build around?
No,
or like
I'd say more
move?
Like Kent, like Carson Palmer in some of his earlier Cardinals runs where he was the opposite of mobile.
Stationary.
Right. How quickly will Rosen be forced to go in there if this offensive line is slaughtering the quarterback?
To take the positive outlook if you're a Cardinals fan with Bradford, and I kind of hate when other people do this, but I will do this, is that in one game last year before the knee acted up, Bradford kind of played out of his mind. So maybe Sam Bradford could still sling it, and maybe he does stay healthy. But with a bad offensive line, that's highly unlikely.
His best two seasons are his previous two seasons before that one game. So, you know, Wesseling, you were talking him up. I think he's a good – I think he could have, if he was healthy, a decent second back half of his career, like Carson Palmer.
This is no shot at anyone in particular, but when we rebuild this studio, we should have a monument to Sam Bradford's first game of the 2017 season.
This is Colleen Wolf, and I endorse that statement. Now move on.
Wow.
San Francisco 49ers, Chris Wesseling.
Kyle Shanahan said after the season, you want people to feel good about a 6-10 season? Start 0-9. And as great as we feel about this offense, their close in December really masked how bad their defense is. When you're talking about the transformation from a 3-4 to a 4-3 that just hasn't taken yet, it hasn't paid any dividends. And sometimes these transitions, depending on the personnel that's already on the roster, they go fluidly. Like Wade Phillips often has success. This one has gone poorly despite drafting defensive linemen three straight years in the first round, 2015, 16, and 17. Elvis Dumervil, who is now retired, led this defense in sacks last year, 6.5. They don't get after the passer despite all that talent on the defensive line, and they really struggle to guard outside wide receivers. You hope Richard Sherman helps that. But this defense, as high as we are on the 49ers and Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan, the defense could be among the worst in the NFC.
Reminds me of Mike Shanahan, just that for year after year, he essentially had personnel control in Denver. He could never figure out a way to build a good defense for much of that Denver run. You hope that's not what happens to Kyle Shanahan, but right now, you're right. On paper, it's a below-average defense.
But, I mean, the thing is, they have poured resources in, as you mentioned, and you look at just the names, like Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Jaquiski Tartt, I mean, Solomon Thomas. There's names here, but it did not mesh last year. And it puts a lot of pressure suddenly, because I think the one thing here is everyone at that six games ended the season and gave them a great vibe, and they were the sexiest team of the offseason. But now everyone's going to be disappointed if Jimmy G doesn't roll out and knock out teams the same way over the first 6 weeks of this season. And it doesn't help when your defense is probably putting you in a hole each week.
I think they're going to be similar to the Seahawks, where I think they'll be competitive. I think they maybe could sneak out 9 wins. But for the reasons Wes said, the defense isn't ready, and the offense, we're expecting them to take a huge leap with Jimmy G. The Jerick McKinnon thing is a little bit of a bummer, too. Like, he has basically been taken out of the equation ramping up to the season. What will that mean for the offense out of the gate? I wonder if this is a team that potentially can get off to a slow start.
Yeah, the personnel on paper doesn't look even that good on offense. You're just kind of counting on Kyle Shanahan to be incredible, and Jimmy Garoppolo at this point seems like a perfect human. Like, he shouldn't play anymore. Has any quarterback ever, like, seemed more, like, limitless and perfect than Jimmy Garoppolo after last season? Like,
Andrew Luck's rookie year.
RG3 was pretty...
You're saying, though, like, well, cut bait at that point and go into the sunset.
I don't know what you do.
Human.
I'm just saying, like, he's at 100 right now. Like, there's only going down.
I just think it's a kind of a rough place to be if you're Jimmy G, where everyone's expectations are so, so sky high. And it
beats the alternative.
Ten. No, it's nine, it beats not playing.
I would
playing
literally
New England.
Do anything to be Jimmy G.
I would do anything.
Four, I'd sell out anybody. Three, I'd do anything.
Kill people.
One.
Everything.
Wow. Wes was really living his best life on that one.
All
offseason,
baby.
I'll
allow that. I don't like the concept that I'm mansplaining who can use best life. I will allow any of our producers to use it, just nobody else.
But before we get...
Your authority is crumbling.
Don't put me in that box.
Don't put baby in a corner. Before we move to the NFC South. Let's stay with the 49ers. A former 49er, Colin Kaepernick, an arbitrator, denied the NFL's request for a summary judgment in Kaepernick's collusion complaint against the league, finding there is enough evidence to allow the case to go to trial. This broke on Thursday afternoon and was met with a big, big hubbub on social media. The football cognoscenti was super fired up about it, saying how the NFL was facing a worst-case scenario, wanting this to go away. Greg, you did a little search, short for research, and you said that
it is not, but fair
maybe
enough.
That's not that big a deal, what happened yesterday.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far.
Did some search.
My research
My research is
Stop
entire.
Taking search.
I'll let the listeners know. I read the Michael McCann article on SI.com. He's a legal expert
Fancy
who does
you.
A lot of this stuff.
And, I read.
And after reading it, the repercussions of this decision are complex and vast, and I didn't fully understand them even after reading them. It could be an absolute worst case for the NFL. The fact that it's even moving forward is bad news for the owners and could lead to a lot of things. But it's like he doesn't know. No one is totally sure. It just is something that's like we have to watch. It's not going away. I guess that's my takeaway.
Next time, let's get Wes on the reading assignment because Greg came out of it with very
murky I think it's
results,
okay so. To read
he did decent search.
Complicated topics and say, like, actually, we don't really understand this that well.
Yeah, gotcha.
But it's not a surprise. It's not going away. It sounds like it's going to lose.
It sounds like he could win
the
case. Like, he has a decent chance to win the case,
I think
but he could lose
that
the case,
to me,
too.
Though, that, to me, is it could have been stopped right there, right? And it wasn't. So someone who knows the case better at all its in-depthness said, no, this is not going away. It is continuing based on the evidence.
Kaepernick had a good preseason.
And in theory, it could blow up the whole collective bargaining agreement. That seems like a real long shot. But the interesting thing is, in theory, they could settle with Colin Kaepernick. And Colin Kaepernick does not seem like a man who is going to settle at any point.
YOLO. Let's move on. The Saints. Mark Sessler.
Well, maybe it points out the exercise, some of its strengths and weaknesses, but I had a very similar question to what Dan had about the Rams, because I pitched the Saints as a team of ATL, and the more I thought about it, you might be right that it's not a fun team because they might be too good.
Payton's the head coach, too.
I like Sean Payton. Yeah. Good. Actually, see, I talked to Sean Payton at the Combine and told
Do
him
your
he
job.
Was going to win the Super Bowl. And he's like, oh, thanks, man. And then he just kept walking. But it was like, all right, that kind of linked me with the Saints in a very vague, non-real way. But anyways, my point would be this. It is similar to the Rams because I look at the Saints as a super complete team. And that's not – like, there were years when it was, we love the offense, but the defense is going to shipwreck this team year after year. They're going to have to score 35 points a game. They've got pieces on defense now, so it's a similar question to the Rams when it comes to the Achilles heel. Where do you look at the Saints and say, in a rugged NFC, you're going down because of this reason?
Front seven. Maybe it's
didn't
just,
we come off last season loving that front seven?
Maybe it's muscle memory, but I'm not that – like, they have six different starting middle linebackers that they're just putting at different positions. They have Cameron Jordan, but the rest of the defensive line, I think it's fair to at least question – and they were better on defense, but they were relying on turnovers. It's not like they're a difference maker. Maybe it's just seeing them year after year. I don't quite trust them to be great
about,
on defense.
How about last year was such a different offense for them and an incredible year for the backfield where you got 3,000 yards between Kamara and Ingram. Now Ingram's suspended, and Kamara, maybe he'll be able to pick up the slack and be just as good as he was as a rookie. But also – same thing with the Rams. Are they going to be able to average 30 points a game? Maybe, but maybe not. Can you really expect that same level of production? And then at the quarterback, I'm out of this game because when it comes to quarterbacks and how long they play, but like he's another year older, Drew Brees, and I know he played well last year, but it's fair to wonder if the burden is increased on the 40-year-old quarterback. Could he handle it? Is he Peyton Manning or is he Tom Brady?
I think Mark's original question speaks to Marcus Davenport as one of the most crucial rookies in the NFL this year, that you gave up next year's first-round pick because you saw this guy as the missing link to your Super Bowl title hopes. And if this front seven is going to work, they're going to need that outside edge rusher. Cameron Jordan's bringing a lot of pressure from the front, but they need that outside guy to crash the pocket.
The one thing on the Ingram four-game ban, I don't know if that's always the worst thing on the planet for a team to come back in week five totally fresh.
It was great for Tom Brady. I always thought it was like one of the underrated parts of that entire season.
And they might find a guy like Jonathan Williams can play in his absence.
Our old Spice Rack fan. Kamara, for being maybe the most exciting offensive player to enter the league since Odell Beckham, it's kind of, we haven't really talked about him that much. I'm excited to see year two.
Beep, boop, bop, you're done.
quick aside before we move on.
That's my favorite one.
They disdain us. They absolutely hate us.
They're not fans of our podcast. One quick aside, my good buddy Bob, who works in Tinseltown.
Castron!
Entertainment business.
Yes, he does.
Working on a show that and comprises some type of reality dating component based in Vegas. Bob reached out to me about whether Spice Rack would be interested in being on a reality dating show.
I would pay to watch that.
That would be good.
I reached out to Spice Rack and was absolutely stunned to learn that the man has been dating a woman and living with a woman for 4 years.
So, what?
So he declined it.
West
he declined the opportunity.
Four
Spice
years.
Rack is shacked up.
I think.
Ladies, hands off the merchandise.
I knew he had a girlfriend because Spice Rack and I have been quietly developing
a weird
friendship.
Greg on this one.
And I did know he had a girlfriend.
Oh. Emma, no more DMs. Spice Rack, off the market. Yeah.
One question about when it comes to Bob and Tinseltown. Yeah. Does he have a Twitter burner account like Erica does where she calls herself Ricky Hollywood?
Rough. It's a rough situation. She probably should move away from that. All right, let's get back into it. The Carolina Panthers, Chris Wessling.
The Panthers have some luck factors going against them this year. They were 8-1 in close games last year, and they had ridiculous fumble luck. Usually, analytics tell us that evens out if
search.
You were – yeah, well, yeah. Deep search tells us.
I don't like this term at all.
That won't happen. You can't count on that. So they're already behind that. They went 20. They've been 25-2 since Cam got there when he has a 100 passer rating. Their two losses, according to Football Outsiders, were last year, both to the Saints. They finished this season, New Orleans, Atlanta at New Orleans in December. To me, the Panthers can't be expected to repeat last year's playoff run because of those factors working against them. The end of the schedule and the luck factor, the randomness factor, which will probably work against them this year.
Mark and I were talking downstairs. It's almost like one of those three NFC South teams has to fall hard.
Yes.
They can't stay all at that level. Logically, the Panthers have the best case for being that team that does fall off.
I agree with you. It's easy right now to just kind of shuffle teams into the wild card spot and say we're going to get another three from the South, and it's history tells us that will get completely blown up and not be the case. And this isn't the Panthers' defense of a couple years ago. It's not the same unit, but I do still see them as a team that could probably beat almost anyone in a given week with some of the skill position players.
I think their skill position talent is way better than last year.
And I think their offensive coordinator should be better. I like the idea of Cam Newton. I just like the idea of giving Cam Newton a new shot. Shaq Thompson was one guy that really kind of jumped off the screen in the preseason who had never really had that breakout. He's replacing Thomas Davis for four games on the field every snap. And, like, just the way they're talking about him, the way he looked, it looked like he might be kind of ready to take that spot and be a star.
Can he play left tackle?
No.
Because the offensive line is a big problem right now.
Cam Newton with North Turner, probably not a 66% completion percentage.
That's your big
storyline
with this team.
Maybe Norv does find something new and there's some way to improve his game that the previous coordinator that was there forever didn't think to look under a certain rock. And then Christian McCaffrey, you know.
I mean, he looks great in the preseason.
What if Christian McCaffrey becomes one of the top three running backs in the NFC and then Cam Newton gets better under North Turner as – you know, in a Jim Bob Cooter, Matthew Stafford way.
And you throw in
way.
DJ Moore, I think that's a big add to this.
I wouldn't
too.
Assume they're the team that's going to drop in this division.
If Cam misses two games because he goes head first into like a pile and, you know, they're starting Taylor Heineke and then the season's over.
I'm not saying Norm is doomed to failure, but the last three teams that got rid of him got better. Including last year's Vikings.
Powerful stuff, Dan. You're deaf my favorite.
But that was good. All right, the Falcons. Per Football Outsiders, Falcons dropped from first to ninth in offensive DVOA last season, second in yards per drive, seventh in points per drive, which is good. Those are very good numbers. They had the fewest possessions in the league, which is weird and probably not repeatable. So you got to think about that and how they can improve. It helps to explain why their scoring average dropped so much. But that wasn't the biggest issue. Their biggest issue was how terrible they were in the red zone. They ranked 19th in red zone passing DVOA, 26th in red zone running DVOA, 23rd in total red zone. They were one of the worst teams in football in the red zone. Inexcusable, and that goes back to coaching, and that takes us to offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian. It is fitting that their defense, their offense failed four straight plays to end their season against the Eagles, and I think what this season is about, given their talent level, Sarkisian's not going to be Kyle Shanahan, but he has to improve his scheme to maximize what's an embarrassment of riches in Atlanta. My question, will Sark learn from his failures, or will the Falcons rue their decision to give their embattled OC another bite at the apple?
I would point to the first year under Kyle Shanahan, where they were not what we remember under Kyle Shanahan. They had their issues. And Matt Ryan, who spent most of his career in the same offense over and over, that was a period of adjustment. Now, the shift to Sarkisian's offense was not as drastic on any level. He used a lot of the same stuff. I think they're going to be okay. I think on both sides of the ball, they have a lot of team speed, and those red zone numbers, by definition, will probably go up. I think adding Calvin Ridley to the mix at wide receiver, you got a diverse backfield. I don't know what's not to like about this offense. I think Hooper's going to have a huge year at tight end as well.
That's not the problem. It's not the talent level, and adding Ridley should help. You never know with the rookie wide receiver, but like, is Sarkisian the guy? Or is he going to hold this team back because he held them back last year?
But that's execution, too, in the red zone. It's not just on the coach. But I would say they probably will get better under him versus just worse.
You got to have a better option. And they apparently didn't think that there was one out there. They're an interesting case for, like, continuity because other than Ridley, this is just the same team. This has been basically the same team. And I think that's great. I like seeing that occasionally in the NFL. Like, this should be a year. And one of their guys that's been there, Vic Beasley, to me is the X factor because he went from a defensive MVP candidate to a liability. So what is he going to be this year?
Yeah, I think when we look at their roster, we always point to Sark because where are their weaknesses? And Vic Beasley is one. He went from being a guy going for the sack leadership to a guy who disappeared last year. And also special teams have to be better. They were not good on special teams last year, and they have one of the toughest schedules in the league this year. Like, so those are more problems for the Falcons.
They're so drama-free. Like, they almost had no position battles. They just, like, showed up. They kind of know what their team is.
Which is boring until you're 12-4.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Final word goes to Mark there.
Yeah, Mark, you're really going to have to pick up the pace here.
That's probably not untrue.
The Tampa Bay Schnucks, Greg Rosenthal.
I'm going to get excited to watch this Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense when Jameis Winston comes back. But the takeaway for me coming out of training camp was that Ronald Jones is probably not going to be the guy to put them over the top during his rookie season at running back.
What a disastrous preseason.
We haven't talked about him really, but basically he's struggled so much. He hasn't gained yards. He struggled in the passing game. The coaches don't seem in love with him that he's probably going to start the year behind Peyton Barber and Jaquizz Rodgers. And so he's not really in the mix. And they were hoping that would give them a little extra juice, a little more balance, because I think this could be one of the most highest yardage passing teams in the league. They were really pretty good last year on offense if the defense had just been even average. I think they have enough on offense at least to get it done, but Ronald Jones isn't going to be helping them out.
He was beloved by draft picks too. So, I mean, it's just another reminder that no matter what you do in college, you don't know on most of these guys until they take the field in the NFL. And I'm not saying he's going to have a bad career, but you're certainly not expecting a big September and October out of this guy.
It's also funny because people say, oh, you can find running backs anywhere. Don't take them too high. And they took him at the end of the second with their second-round pick, I believe, or the top of the second, rather. It's like, no, you can't. You can find them anywhere, but plenty of them don't turn out to be that good. It's hard to find.
This is the team that I spent most of the offseason just ticketing for like a 2-14 campaign. And not to pull too much from the preseason, like that is a I'm getting so tired of saying that. Anyways, the preseason is what it is. Have a nice time with yourselves. But like, they rolled over the Lions. They decimated the Lions with their starting offense a couple weeks ago.
Super Bowl.
No, but it made me think. Like, you think a certain way about a team for months and months, and every time you discuss the Bucs, it's an epic disaster. The coaches can be gone by Halloween. I don't know. I mean, the offense to me has a lot of parts. There's a lot of the same parts, the reason that we fell for them last offseason, are there, and they actually produced on offense last year.
They trashed the Saints' defense in Week 17 in a game the Saints desperately wanted. And
that's almost like the Sam Bradford game at this point, too.
And we haven't mentioned even the defense. Jason Pierre-Paul.
Week 1 and 17.
Jason Pierre-Paul's reportedly had a great preseason, and they did bulk up on that defensive line. They should be better up front.
Maybe because last year this time, everyone was ticketing the Bucs as the next team to rise in the NFC. Now people have gone maybe too far the other way. Maybe they're not as bad as everyone is just ticketing them to be, and they'll be
a lot of one-score losses last year.
Again, a tough, very tough NFC. I don't think they're going to be necessarily fighting for that division or a playoff spot, but could they be competitive and win around eight games? I would not think that would be insane.
I mean, I feel like every team in the NFC is about to go 11-5. Someone's got
it. They need to get a win. They could really use a win in the Ryan Fitzpatrick games, which are really tough. Because if you start 0-3, it's like your season's over. They really need to get
They need a little Fitzmagic.
What is that schedule out of the gate for them?
Saints, Eagles, Steelers.
Stuff.
Then at Bears, bye, at Falcons.
You're done.
They're not going to be favored in many games.
Ha! The Bucks. Am I right? Next.
So Erica, not compelled with the evidence we provided about a potential middle-of-the-road season.
All right. We pause. It's halftime, folks. Everybody get your Gatorade, drink your eat your orange slices, check your phones. Mark?
Break out that LaCroix.
Get that LaCroix out.
Do not do that.
I had some lemon LaCroix, I got to say, since we're here, since Greg brought it up. and doesn't have the same tang and bite that lime LaCroix does. Still a big leader in the clubhouse.
I'm not a big fan in general. And just drink seltzer water. And while really we're here, like bubbles that much.
Mark Pesavento, who's a big-time shadowy league figure here at NFL, he introduced me to Bubbly, a new product that has a
champagne?
Cherry flavor, which is – no, it's also a sparkling water. Really nice kick to it. And I might be ready to leave LaCroix for Bubbly, but I don't want to make the announcement yet.
Well, sparkling typically, water is whenever when these campaigns –
Bubbly should be giving us money or at least some Bubbly.
Yeah, comes out of your tap, just drink it.
When these campaigns are unfurled by
Dan – If it comes
Dan,
out of the well, drink it.
MVP's chugging LaCroix
no,
back
this
there.
Is typically –
Please put bubbles in my
I
water.
I will get this sentence out. Dan is typically – all this comes down to is Dan is on a sneaky – long-range plot to get boxes of LaCroix sent.
Ooh,
it's always
idea.
Product that needs to be sent by this phantom straw man company that he's pitching, whether straw it's man. LaCroix or hair gel. He got a box of hair gel.
Worked with
like
the cereal.
25 of them. Did yeah, you share with could, anyone? No, think, just took it right home to his house.
I think
house.
It could work. Come on,
what?
Bubbly.
Why
hook
are you
us up.
Why are you down on it? That is not my goal. But when people
it is absolutely your
you
goal.
Know why? Because I speak passionately about the products that I love, and these
well,
people pick
fine.
Up on it, and that's why I get these things sent to me. This is not. I'm speaking from the heart, bro.
Right. Well, you could care less about LaCroix 12 days ago, and now it's
I just didn't
know,
speak on it until the other day. Stick a pin in that.
I'm loving this interlude, by the way, because we're creeping up to that 68.
That's right. I'm trying to help Greg out here.
All right, here we go, Mark. It's time for you to ban some more words.
I am going to ban words, and the only people that are allowed to say these words are Emma, VP, and Erica because they are completely uncontrollable, and I'm not going to attempt to saddle them.
Sounds fair.
And rein them in on any level.
Okay.
These are two phrases. Number one, these are things you'll see in print, often on Twitter in response to a story. There's typically retweeting something that's going viral or what is it you call something that's not totally viral, Emma?
Mini-vi?
Mini-vi. It's going mini-vi potentially.
All right.
But the first thing, when it's a touchy or it's like a really touching type thing involving often a child, you'll get all these people retweeting and saying, I'm not crying, you're crying. Okay. That's got to go.
That's from a movie.
I don't care where it came from. I don't need to see that on Twitter.
Okay.
Every time something happens, because here's the thing.
I see. Okay.
It's like above right. a thing, and it's not that it's one person came up with it. It's 88 people in a row. I'm not crying. You're crying. And then this is often attached to what absolutely needs to go and be deep sixed. And I don't even think that Emma would want to say this typically. She's too creative. All the feels.
What? Get rid of that right now.
All the feels.
All the feels is a response?
We've seen all the feels.
Oh, yeah, all
out
the
there.
Feels is when something
like,
heartwarming. All the feels.
All the
every
feels.
Feeling in the spectrum of
right,
emotions
right.
are currently overriding
I mean,
this, my
right.
system.
Yeah, this isn't going to be like a tough ask for any of us to get rid
no,
of. But you're saying society.
I don't
at large.
Need it. I don't need it. I don't
a
need
grown
to see
man
it on my
should
timeline.
Not be writing all the feels anyway.
Thank you. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you. That was your best one.
We are compiling what essentially is a banned dictionary. Not every one of these are going to be grand slams out of the park. That
a banned dictionary.
Can well, I yes, offer?
This is like 1920s Russia or something.
My one takeaway from this exercise that you've had for about a week now is that you're basically asking for originality from people.
Yes,
or
I
that
think
you
it's...
should quit. You know, flirting with it and just quit Twitter.
Or we should have a better monitor. I understand all the feels was funny for like a week, maybe. Not to say to me, but to some. But it's like we're into week 28 of or year two of this still being thrown about, and it's a tired jargon. When it becomes tired and it wasn't funny to begin with, you have got to have the self-control not to lean on that phrase, please.
MVP, as the only non-old here, what is your take?
All the feels. Both super lame, would never say it. Broadcast does not endorse.
Thank you.
There we go.
We're on the same page now.
Mm-hmm. We feel I feel better about myself now that Emma has okayed.
Mark was suddenly like a short order cook in the South there. I like that.
And on the subject of things that should be banned.
Roberto Aguayo to win it on the last play. 26 yards, and he does. So the Chargers take the last preseason game on the final kick. Roberto Aguayo puts it through, and the Chargers win the game 23-21.
Ban that man from broadcasting. Do you understand the importance in Robbie Aguayo's life to hit a game-ending field goal? I don't care if it's the fourth preseason game.
It was the 49ers announcer, clearly.
It doesn't matter who it is. You have to understand the stakes of what Roberto Aguayo has been through since being the second-round pick of the Bucks, the way he's floundered, the challenges that he's been met with, and what he's overcome to be now at a dead heat with Caleb Sturgis for the kicker crown for the Chargers, and just wait, watch the Chargers make the wrong decision and keep Aguayo, and then Aguayo kills him. But that's for later. For this moment right now, he deserved a really spirited call, and he got banged in a big spot.
How about could you give us just a quick glimpse into how you might have called that final moment in the game?
I'd be screaming my balls off, Sessler.
You
that's all
why?
I got to say.
I just want to hear the call.
I think it makes sense. I agree with you, and yet on some level it does make sense for the lowest energy possible call would be to be the road announcer on a game-winning field goal for the other team in the fourth week of the preseason. That's low energy.
It's not asking for much here. I agree with Dan.
I agree with you.
If Roberto Aguayo can rise to the occasion, the least the announcer can do is rise to the same occasion.
It's Ted Robinson. I know who that is.
You know what it says? Sounds like Ted. To me? Somebody didn't do their search.
By the way, that has to be apostrophe search. We're not just starting with S, right?
The wait is nearly over. Football is almost here, which means it's fantasy football season, and FanDuel has never been more fun or easy to play. If you're not a fantasy expert, then FanDuel is clearly the place to play. FanDuel is something for everyone, and there are more ways to win than ever before. Don't believe us? How's this sound? This season, FanDuel is running a free $250,000 Survivor Contest. This is the biggest free Survivor Contest ever. Here's how it works. You pick one team to win each week, and you can't reuse that team again for the rest of the season. You know what that is. It's a knockout pool. This locks before week one, so don't miss your chance to sign up now. To get that free $250,000 Survivor Contest, just go to FanDuel.com/aroundTheNFL. That's FanDuel.com/aroundTheNFL. Plus, new users get a $20 bonus when they make their first deposit. It on FanDuel. Come play with me, nay, us, at FanDuel.com/aroundTheNFL. Come on, copy. It's got to be an us. We move on. Second half begins with the old Zeuser and the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings are the defending division champions. Oh, isn't that nice? And they've upgraded their quarterback situation. They have Kirk Cousins, of course. They're absolutely loaded on defense. What a unit. They have several elite playmakers on offense. They're getting back the kid in the backfield, Dalvin Cook. So why can't I shake this feeling that this team and this fan base is like so many of those birds outside U.S. Bank Stadium, soaring, confident, free, and then splat. Why do I have a terrible feeling about the 2018 Vikings? And maybe there's no way to quantify that or explain why I feel that way.
Yeah, I'm at a loss for how you
Does anybody else just have a bad feeling in this loaded NFC that the Vikings somehow will be the team that's remembered as the big disappointment?
I share it exactly. Just because I just felt like I didn't want to pencil in like the five great-looking teams all back to the playoffs and with no real reason beside that the offensive line is banged up – didn't look great maybe to begin with, and Kirk Cousins behind a bad offensive line doesn't get me excited. They were the team I picked to be on the outside looking in. Now, that might be a 9-7 missed the playoffs or a 10-6
that
missed
the
playoffs.
That would be a disaster in
Minnesota. But that was what I'm picking, is them not to make the playoffs.
For what they have on paper, especially when you look at the defensive roster, that would be an epic collapse for them not to make it. But sometimes the issues are internal or they're external. And for me, there's a couple external. A, it's the rest of the NFC, which gets, you know, we've been talking about that the whole show. But you get Aaron Rodgers back in Green Bay. You're not going to sail through that division the way you did last year. I mean, I think Chicago and Detroit, at least Chicago seems like they could put up a little bit more of a fight. Like, last year, everything sort of went right for the Vikings. Instead of the fact that here's where I like them, it didn't out of the gate. They had quarterback chaos. They had to deal with a lot of quarterback turnover. They lost Dalvin Cook. You're getting him back. So you can make an argument that they're even stronger, even more star-studded on offense. So for them to go 9-7 and be left on the outside, that would be one of the biggest collapses we've seen by any team in years.
Yeah, I can't get on board with the negativity here. The one thing I think that separates the Vikings from all the other NFC contenders is that every single meaningful player is in the prime of his career. Who's toeing the cliff here? Who's on the verge of retirement? Who's in injury risk because he's over 30? Everyone is in like that 24 to 29, 30 range where you're
the
just
center,
in your prime.
You know, they lost the guard for the season, one of their starters. Pat Elflein, the center, has been hurt. But you're right. That the continuity, the fact that the defense knows, they all know that system so well. Mike Hughes, their first-round pick, might kind of buck the trend and be a rookie starter on that team as the slot guy, but I view that as a positive, that he obviously looks great to play so quickly for a defense this good. You're right. They're all in their prime. They should be good.
Dan, quick, any of your concerns about Kirk Cousins specifically?
Yes, pressing, bad offensive line, get paid a ton of money. A little bit. A little bit.
Now that was a banger.
I think that was one of our better ones.
All right.
Good job by Colleen.
Greg, the Detroit Lions.
The expectation when Matt Patricia goes to the Lions is that this is a defensive coach. You know, you're going to be a defensive team and build your team that way. But I look at this roster, and it reminds me a lot of the Patriots under Matt Patricia, which was a highly capable quarterback, continuity, and a high-scoring offense. And a defense with a ton of questions. I think if they're going to win, they're going to have to be a team that wins 30 to 25 every week. You know, they don't have a great-looking pass rush on paper. Some of their recent draft picks, Jared Davis, their first-round pick from a year ago, I think has been a little concerning in the preseason and even last year. Like, they don't really have that benchmark. And then you look on the other side of the ball, and everyone's been around for a while. And then the backfield with Blunt and Kerryon Johnson and Theo Riddick, I love that backfield. Like, I'm with Wes that if nothing else, this is going to be a fun team to watch. I think when they're playing the Packers, like, that's a game that's going to be in the 30s. They're going to give the Vikings defense all they can handle. But I don't know if that's a recipe to go that far in this conference.
Yeah, I think I have a good feeling about the Lions, but in this division, in this conference, they don't have much margin for error. Like you said, their defense, that front seven worries me. I think the secondary might be the most underrated in the NFL because Glover Quinn is the most underrated player in the NFL.
But who's starting opposite Darius Slay? They kind of had the same issue year after year, and they were hoping to maybe replace him.
Tease Tabor
struggled in the preseason. They've had some injuries there. They've kind of had the same issues year after year on that side.
Do we take anything from the last two games they put on tape? I mean, again, we talked about the Bucks
the preseason?
Ripping them up, and then last night's game.
I'm not putting any
I don't actually.
I don't care.
The individual players, like Jared Davis, the reporters saying he struggled a little bit in practice, and then he struggled in the preseason. That I worry about, but not necessarily.
There were some starters on the field last night on their defense when they got absolutely bombed by Cleveland. I've never seen a Browns game like that. Again, it's preseason.
I think you were the only person that saw it, but
I would check it out. Like, Matt Patricia looks
it
totally,
was Baker Mayfield,
looks totally beguiled on the sideline over the last 3 weeks. He looks steamed.
Kenny Golladay, a guy ticketed for maybe big things this year. You have Golden Tate, who's a steady guy that doesn't get a ton of love but always produces, and Marvin Jones, who's really been a nice player for them. That's pretty good triplet.
Yes.
Is that one of the better triplets?
If Golladay is who we think he is.
It's up there. They don't have the true, like, dominant number one that the very best of them had, but it's up there.
The Detroit Lions brought to you by some L.A. bozos.
Green Bay Packers, Chris Wessling.
Over the past half decade, there have been two different Packers teams. There have been the Green Bay Packers and the Clavicle Packers. The Green Bay Packers fell because,
hate the clavicle Packers.
Because of the clavicle injury, they missed a chance to become the first team to tie the record for most consecutive playoff appearances with 9. They are 5-12-1 during Aaron Rodgers' absences. This is compared, let's say, to the Vikings, who won the division with a backup quarterback last year. The Cardinals went 5-4 with Blaine Gabbert and Drew Stanton down the stretch. Other teams can survive their backup quarterbacks, but I think this speaks to how good Rodgers is, how far that wide receiver core has fallen apart when it used to be the best in the league, and how bad the defense has been. This is not a strong roster. Aaron Rodgers hides a lot of problems.
Mark, your boy Mike Lombardi put a report out there or said it on his podcast that everyone in the league knows that Randall Cobb is out and on trade bait. He could be potentially cut this weekend. That's a pretty precipitous fall by Cobb, and it does highlight kind of what Wes is saying, that they don't have the depth that they used to have.
Well, he is what? He's got a high contract. I think it's almost $9 million, and he's got lingering, concerning ankle issues. So I don't know who's going to be trading for him. But this may be a Packers team that has to ask Mike Pettine's defense to do a little bit more than what these past defenses have done. And they do have new faces on defense. Like, there's a lot to talk about with the cornerback position. Jair Alexander, Josh Jackson, Greg's boy, Kenny Clark. He was texting about him the other day. He likes him up the middle. He got Mo Wilkerson. Mike Pettine, maybe Mo Wilkerson is a one-year deal, but Mike Pettine has more pieces to work with than Dom Capers did. And I think the removal of Dom Capers has had a nice positive change for the Packers in general.
Well, Pettine's a good coach.
And you have hope that Kevin King, who was last year's second round pick, and then Alexander and Jackson, who both looked really good in the preseason, you kind of figure that Mike Pettine is going to do well with those guys. And then Wilkerson, Clark, and Mike Daniels, that is a great defensive line. We'll see what Wilkerson adds. For what it's worth, Mike Daniels said, you know, Wilkerson was saying it was the best offseason of his life. He's all motivated to, you know, prove everyone wrong. We'll see.
Whatever. If Jackson and Alexander do play a lot in that secondary, they'll probably have the youngest secondary in the NFL, and they can take solace in the fact that the Saints had the youngest secondary in the NFL last year and turned that defense around.
I think Alexander's their starting nickel. King, who's the second year, is probably a starting cornerback. I mean, I think it's a good roster, Wes. Maybe they have some holes.
If the secondary
you
is
have an
what,
all-pro left tackle.
But you're
you
saying,
have Jimmy
like,
Graham.
You think it's a good roster, but you're also counting on Mo Wilkerson, who was the subject of a Brian Baldinger scathing tweet for his effort level. Looked awful in the preseason.
Well, so year after year, we ticket them for the playoffs. I don't know about this year.
I think they're a Super Bowl team.
I do, too.
What? I'm going to order a pizza. You guys in?
The Chicago Bears. Mark Sessler.
So, from like an optics standpoint, I can't help, and I understand we all hate the preseason, but this last 4 weeks, like, the whole thing, I feel like Mitch Trubisky.
We talk about yesterday's Browns game again.
No. I just think that. Am I wrong? Mitch Trubisky.
Nate Orchard really pushing for that roster spot.
Quiet August, and I get that Matt Nagy's keeping the playbook under wraps, and we're not going to see anything. But I ask a question for you: if you were building a team today, would you take Mitch Trubisky and what you know about him over a season and 1 month over any of the 5 rookie quarterbacks that went in the first round?
That's so mean to Mitch.
No, I'm just asking where we are with Mitch Trubisky.
But we don't know yet, right?
Who would you take him over?
Lamar Jackson, easily.
So let's remove Lamar Jackson from let's say the other 4.
I just
would
feel
you?
Like learning from the Jared Goff situation, I really am giving Mitch Trubisky a bit of a rookie year pass. So I don't know.
So no, you wouldn't.
I wouldn't. I mean, I just feel like this guy still deserves this season to show what he can do with an actual offensive mind, minding the controls behind him and better weapons around him. I think he gets that.
Okay, so let me – it's not just to destroy Mitch Trubisky, but I'm asking it more from you. Have a season's of worth of work of what you've seen from Mitch Trubisky. We've seen what Baker Mayfield can do in a short sample size. Sam Darnold. We love Josh Rosen. Like, would you honestly take Trubisky over all those players?
I don't like the question. Like, we don't have enough data to make an informed opinion. Trubisky, you can throw out everything that happened last year in that John Fox team.
Need to
He's
going to
be
coached
search. Totally different. They had a horrible wide receiver core. Like, I don't think you can take anything from last year or the preseason. We just have to wait.
My concern, though, is it's going to take time for this to come together. People just, like, slot in Taylor Gabriel as a plus starter. Like, okay, of course he's going to do that. He's been hurt. He's about as lightweight an outside starter as in the league. He had 378 yards last year. Let's not assume he's going to be great. Allen Robinson really didn't show much in the preseason. Is he going to be, like, a real number one? Like, they have question marks, I think, beyond Trubisky that make you think it might take a little while to get going.
I do feel like we'll get a huge season from Trey Burton. He seems to fit in very well with what they're trying to do.
If we get a huge season from Trey Burton, Mitch Trubisky is probably having a good year. I feel like.
Maybe. That doesn't guarantee that, but. I
mean, Roquan Smith is.
I didn't realize we had like so many Mitch Trubisky fanboys.
I'm just out on people doubting Mitch Trubisky.
It's not just doubting him. The buzz has been so
the
heavy.
Little that
it's
we
like,
know,
I want to see it.
From the little that we know and just how they were coming out of college, no, I wouldn't take him over any of them.
I mean, in this situation specifically, I think the preseason means absolutely nothing. Like, I'm just not concerned about Matt Nagy not even actually using his offense in the preseason and then trying to judge Trubisky off
He
that.
Barely put him out there. I think, but it's a little bit of an aside, but the Rams and the Bears, I think if they come out strong, 10, it might have an effect on how teams approach the preseason.
Pulling quarterbacks
they
the whole
really,
way.
They Six, really just, five, especially the Rams, four, went another level.
3, 2, 1.
How do you guys think this is going?
It's fine.
I didn't like that last segment at all.
Eagles, NFC East, the defending champions. Easy question. Why would they cut Christian Hackenberg? No, just kidding. It's hard to repeat as a Super Bowl champion. Only one team has pulled it off, what, in like 25 years? Pats, obviously, in the early aughts.
Cowboys
in the mid-90s. History tells us it's unlikely. Not the biggest concern I have. It's about health, and it's about two guys in particular. Obviously, Carson Wentz is number one on that list. I know he is splitting reps evenly with Nick Foles, but the fact of the matter is we're taping this on Friday. We are 6 days away from the kickoff of the Eagles season, and Carson Wentz has not been cleared for contact and practice yet, so he is a complete wild card about his availability. And Alshon Jeffrey is the other guy. He is their top wide receiver, I think. I think maybe you can make Ertz. You could say Ertz, even though he doesn't want the
According to Michael Kendricks, that's the best receiver on the team.
Yeah. He doesn't want that smoke.
He doesn't want that smoke. But the best wide receiver is Jeffrey. He was their leading touchdown guy last year. He's going to miss at least 2 weeks. Could be back week three. Bad shoulder. All right, these guys are both going to return. But are they going to be the guys that the Eagles need them to be in a loaded NFC? And is it more likely that next May we'll be reading the puff pieces that Carson Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey are both thrilled to finally be back to themselves as they prepare for a new season?
I think the Wentz thing is obviously concerning just because suddenly you're going to be in the total fray of it. But there's also, in terms of the overall team health, I just find every year from like a human angle, we tend to, everyone, overemphasize the first frame of the season, the first 4 weeks, when so much is typically decided about these teams the rest of the way, that if they can get pretty much all these guys back in good shape by week four, the coaching staff and the way this team's built and the way that they handled injuries and adversity last year, they lost their left. I mean, they lost a ton of guys last year, too, that I just believe that you want to take a consistency, they'll carry it forward.
Will Wentz and Jeffrey be back by week four? Yes. But how long is it going to take before they are what they are at their height, which was last year? That's the thing that would concern me.
That's an X factor.
Mark's point is well taken, that a lot of times it's overblown, but Dan's right. Like, are you sure to recapture your pre-injury form? Will these injuries nag? Will they lead to other injuries over compensation? I think there's a lot of questions. And when you look at the NFC contenders, to me, the Eagles have as many questions as anyone.
They do. It's a great test for the coaching staff, but they have other ways to win games. You know, they have Jim Schwartz and a deep, deep defensive line. They might feel a little better about their secondary this year with Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox in the mix than they did a year ago. They have a great offensive line, which is a great place to start, and probably an improved running game at having Jay Ajayi for the whole season and Corey Clement. Let's not cry for them. Five, let's also give a shout out to Jordan Mailata, the rugby superstar made good. Henry's boy.
You stop it and you stop it right now.
Ooh, look at that.
The Dallas Cowboys like that, Emma. Chris Wessel.
Amazingly enough, I think the Cowboys have probably been underappreciated for the most of the last 2 years. They were 18-6 from 2016 to midseason last year, and then all pros Ezekiel Elliott and Tyron Smith were unavailable. And for a team that is built and relies upon all pros to an extent that no other team does. When you lose one of them, the season goes sideways. They've already lost their All-Pro center, Travis Frederick. They've lost former All-Pros Jason Witten and Dez Bryant. To me, can you count on that 18-6 team showing up when you're already starting the season without some of your All-Pros?
It's an issue. I mean, Tyron Smith, if Tyron Smith is right, though, then that is such a big boost along with Ezekiel Elliott that I think it makes up for. And they do have some major points of optimism. Randy Gregory could change their season. He looked better than he ever looked before he was suspended for the last 2.5 years, essentially. And if he gives them another pass rusher, that's something they didn't have. And Jalen Smith is going to be starting at middle linebacker, and they think that he's going to be a better player than he was a year ago, and it's quite a surprise even that he is starting over their first-round pick. So those are two guys I think that their defense could be a little more – have a little more juice than it has.
Yeah, and will they ever pull the trigger for Earl Thomas? I don't
another
know what we're honestly waiting on at this point to make this happen. It's and one of the most bizarre situations in the NFL.
Their secondary forfeit a lot of leads, second-half leads last year. That was a big problem.
Is the NFL really going to enter a season and go deep into a season with Khalil Mack and Earl Thomas, two of the greatest defenders of the last 10 years, are just not going to be playing football? Is that what's happening here?
I don't buy it.
Yeah, something history tells us this will work itself out.
Mack is a weird one. But
getting up against that deadline now.
We are. Earl Thomas especially, I think, will be back one way or another. But even Mack, it's like, I don't know.
You think Thomas will be back with the Seahawks, though?
I don't know.
That just sounds about as one of the most discordant scenarios out there right now with what Earl Thomas has said. And maybe only second to Mack, where they're not even talking.
The Cowboys traded for an offensive guard last night, Parker Ehringer from the Chiefs. So I think that speaks to what you were saying, Wes. They're missing a center, and you know we don't know how Zach Martin's going to be.
T-minus 1 minute.
How about the Cowboys as a team of ATN if they've been kind of overlooked a little bit?
I actually thought about bringing that up myself, but no. Okay. No, of course not.
But they'd be more likable than in years past, I think, because there's a lot of mystery around this team, and you don't know what's going
to
happen.
I think they're a little more fun to watch. Awuzie looks like he could be a shutdown corner, had probably the interception of the preseason. I'm here for like an Ezekiel Elliott like run at the rushing yardage record, which I just feel like could happen. Probably won't happen with this offensive line, but
the last thing the Cowboys need is another bandwagon riding behind them. And we'd be just another bandwagon. Mm. I'm not jumping on the Cowboys like everyone else
does.
Yeah,
to any listeners that were annoyed by the spirit of our thing, picking the Cowboys would not be a way to kick.
We could watch 7 or 8 primetime games together. We know that.
Not a remedy.
Wait, how many more are these?
Two more. The Washington Redskins, Greg Rosenthal.
I've talked about that this Redskins team does not have an identity on defense forever. And it seems like they might have one here in Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen, two guys who went to Alabama together and who looked great in the preseason. Allen looked like a different player than he did a year ago. And if they come together and they're kind of these two rocks in the middle of their defensive line, everyone else starts looking better. Preston Smith and Ryan Kerrigan and whatever's going on in the back with Josh Norman. And suddenly the defense can maybe keep up with a Redskins offense that I feel like I've over-talked about this offseason, but I think is the most exciting-looking Redskins offense that we've seen in a little while. And Adrian Peterson added to that mix? Come on. Who's not in?
Oh, now you're in.
I'm in. I'm in on the Redskins.
I listed them as the forgotten team in the NFC East, although I'm not sure they haven't deserved that.
They have. They've been one of the worst franchises over the last – you know, I know their win-loss hasn't always been terrible, but in terms of, like, consistent mediocrity and bad decisions, they've been up there.
Yeah. It's like a small – what would be the Mount Rushmore of kind of forgettable teams of the last 10 years? Maybe the Redskins, the Lions.
Yeah, definitely the Lions.
Mount Rushmore of forgettable teams.
Seems like it would
Titans,
be
Buccaneers.
The
Bucks.
Titans, I think. Yeah.
The Bills.
It goes against type to build them around a Mount Rushmore.
Right, exactly.
It's like
everyone.
Nobody would go to it.
No. Right, they try to get it together, and then they're like, "Yeah, let's not buy it."
How about the one that's been like that for about 25 or 30 years, the Miami Dolphins?
Oh, yeah.
But this isn't forgettable. I like the idea of
selling tickets for this Mount Rushmore. It's like, why is no one going to this? Oh, because no one cares about the statues.
Would anyone be totally shocked if Alex Smith had a comparable or better season than Kirk Cousins?
No, not shocked.
I mean, he's going in with a healthy offense.
Right.
If Jordan Cousins better. Didn't I think he's a better quarterback.
If Jordan Reed and Chris Thompson and this whole group is all healthy, I think they're going to be problematic.
I think losing Geist makes you not as healthy as you were. You need Adrian Peterson to carry you into December for that to be not an issue.
All of a sudden, yeah, Peterson is such a huge part of a team that fancies itself a division contender. It'll be really fun to see him in that environment. I wonder if he could still –
I enjoyed seeing him run exactly the same way he ran for the Cardinals last year, except this time everyone said he ran great.
We usually kind of dog on the NFC East for getting stuck on our televisions every Sunday night. Just they're kind of like the America's division. But I'm in on the NFC East this year. All four teams seem fun to watch. Like the offenses, the storylines. I'm with these divisions.
So they're finally at last living up to the billing.
The Giants, it's essentially the Giants and Redskins are no longer
boring. Feels a little premature
to me.
Okay.
10, 9. I can't believe Wes trimmed his beard. 7. This is awesome. 6. That's how you know it's
a
big trip.
I felt pampered, 3, and it was awesome. 2.
Have some sparkling water over there.
I'm not doing bubbly
Devil
water.
Who wants to be on the broadcast?
I was waiting. Why did it take so long for the plug? The broadcast podcast, finally, the New York Giants, Mark Sessler.
All right. Dan, you're part of this one.
Oh, okay.
You look at the talent on offense for
G-Men.
And it feels like two scenarios exist for New York's
the G-Men.
Scenario one, with Odell Beckham, Saquon Barkley, Sterling Shepard, Evan Engram, and Nate Solder at left tackle, Pat Shurmur's offense has the requisite firepower to make him a Coach of the Year candidate as
G-Men.
Get back to where they were just two seasons ago, the playoffs. Scenario two.
G-Men
are doomed from the start because you can't trust
G-Men
to reverse fortunes and get back to January play with a 37-year-old Eli Manning at the helm. Per this scenario, fading Eli is much more likely to crash
G-Men
into the side of a building instead of doing what his brother did, play poorly but win a Super Bowl anyway. Gentlemen, what does your crystal ball say about
G-Men? You know, Teej.
Got about probably 30 seconds left to discuss the G-Men.
What was your question?
Well, is it like all these parts are going to come together? We're going to get an Eli Manning does just enough to pull them back in the playoffs. They were there 2 years ago. Or is Eli Manning the reason all these pretty parts crash into the side of a building?
I want to say the latter because that's been, 6 years worth of my analysis on this podcast.
This is really just a question for Wes.
But I really believe that the talent, the skill position talent, is too good for even Eli to mess it up.
And not to get all...
That's such a cop-out, by the way.
It's not. That's the honest analysis here.
I know what you're trying to do here. You're trying to set it up where you'll be right if he sucks, but if he succeeds, you will not give him any credit for it. You'll say anybody could have done it. That's not fair, and I don't give you credit
for it. It's absolutely the case, and it's the way
if you
Eli
the throws, with... If you read the defense, if you stay on the field and you make plays, you deserve credit
for
it.
This is going according to plan.
Eli was carried by Odell for 3 years. His numbers looked okay. He did not quarterback well, and that's what I expect to continue to happen.
Right. We'll see how the line is, but not to get too Mark Sessler on you. Minute. I know it was the preseason, but Eli Manning was pretty sharp in the one game he was out there. He didn't just look all right. I would say it was the best couple quarters I can remember from Eli Manning. It was just a couple drives, but he had a couple throws and he was protected. And I was like, okay, that was. Let's see that again.
Still has the arm. The deep ball look good.
I don't know if he still has the arm.
Hey,
he had one play against the Jets.
What a way to go out with a third Super Bowl title over the Patriots come February.
Over the Patriots, Wes and Greg.
Over the Patriots, my dead body and Greg.
Well, it's happened twice over your living one.
We still have 15 seconds.
I've said my part.
That's the last 15 seconds of Eli Manning's fame.
Back to your beard, Wes. You were feeling pampered when the beard was being
trimmed. I did feel pampered. They put a little talcum powder on. They put some lotion.
That's
some
nice.
Some splash stuff.
You look hot.
Yeah. It was fun. Six, I would do it again. 5, 4, 3.
Eli Manning's the best. 1.
Time's up, bozos.
Wow. Congratulations, in order, now that we're out of the NFC bracket, congratulations to the Baltimore Ravens. Let's go to the Ravens' nest and just give it up. 5-0 in the preseason. Wow. Maybe that's why the nomination came from Chris. The shocking, stunning, head-scratching nomination of Wes of the Ravens.
Can't beat 5-0.
5-0.
I had no idea they were undefeated in the preseason.
Greatest preseason team of all time.
I believe
maybe
I
other
lost.
Teams have tried them, but no one. Actually, maybe there could be some 6
I
or
lost
7
sandwiches there. Here because I had ticketed at some point during one of these operations. I think it was a league, like an NFL record setting 4 undefeated teams in the preseason, and we did not get that. So I will be.
A good thing that no one of us even remember. When was that?
Why am I pointing out my own defeat when none of you even knew it had occurred?
I have an idea, by the way. I'll just throw it out there.
I'll just forward you each $250.
Yes. Okay. Monday, we have a show, a podcast, and then Tuesday, our live show. One of those shows, do you guys want to – I know this is unprecedented, but just try not to dismiss it at hand. A second round of nominations for Team of ATL, just so we have a little bit more to work with, and maybe we can – I don't want us to be jammed into some type of discourse where we're – the way the politics in our country are right now, we're left and right, and there's no in the middle. Maybe we should open it up and throw a couple more teams in the mix and maybe find some common ground.
I would
rather – bipartisan Team of ATN.
I'd rather watch some football. That's what we did initially, and you can see what you like and see whatever and get a feel of these teams. Watch some real football. That's what we did for the first 3 or 4 years. That would be my thing. I don't think right now I'm going to feel any different over the next week.
Yeah, I feel like it's the least we can do, literally, in light of our less than inspiring performance in the first go-round for the nominations, which was a debacle.
I'm strongly in support of the Falcons still, but I see where this is heading, and I know how this works. So I just want to – a compromise is what I was throwing out there.
I know that you. I've spoken to one other member of this podcast about a potential compromise-type team that we both feel we could get behind. That said, I mean, I just go with the flow on this exercise, and I would be fine waiting a little bit before we pick a team that looks like a –
Right, we're not going
to – absolute nightmare?
You think we're going to pick it before week one, you're saying?
We have it. I mean, if you want to change the rules, we can talk about that too. But I think maybe it's – if you want to, like, in the spirit of it, maybe we nominate teams, and then we – from that group that we nominate, we could let it breathe a little bit into the season.
So
maybe
we – I'd be down with that.
A double compromise.
Sure.
Double compromise.
I'm with Mark. I'm along for the ride. Pick whoever you want.
Okay, cool.
I doubt I'm going to step in it.
I feel good about my second nomination, though. It's not just some right. throwaway candidate.
I look forward to hearing it. And finally, apologies to Mitch Trubisky for what happened on the
I should apologize. What I set up a question that was just an absolute disaster, according to the rest of the room. And I've got to, as the soundbite said, pick up the game a little bit, please.
All right. We're very excited. Next time you hear from us, we will be, God willing, on the other side of the country.
Or the world.
Or the world, excuse me. We will be going to the other side of the country, then over the great pond that they call the Atlantic into England. We're so excited. So make sure to say hi to us if you see us there. But until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman with his trimmed beard, the old boss, and Emma VP behind the glass. We'll miss you, Emma.
Miss you so much.
Till London!